On the phone, we have an awesome lady who I had the pleasure of opening for when she performed at St. Rock at Hermosa Beach. I've also had the honor of interviewing her with when she was on our friend's Cat Ellis' show, Chords and Vines. She's a multi-winning singer-songwriter and acclaimed television writer. She's written for shows such as Cheers, Bob for Bob Newhart, The Nanny, Ellen, which her and her partner, Jonathan Stark, won an Emmy and Peabody Award for the puppy episode. Yeah. Love that.
Everybody loves puppies.
One of my favorite shows, The Drew Carey Show. Plus, she and Jonathan created the ABC sitcom According to Jim, which ran for 8 seasons. Her current album, I Can Swing Forever, is an 18-song children's CD and coloring book, which is something I can relate to. It's a collaboration with her and her daughter, Charlotte Dean. She's already received recognition for this album, including receiving the Parents' Choice Foundation's Gold Award. Please welcome to the show my friend, and I can kind of say that because we're friends on Facebook, Tracy Newman. Tracy, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys? You guys sound like you've been up since 5 o'clock this morning. And we're still kicking.
We're so excited about this. We couldn't sleep.
We were waiting for your phone call since 4:30.
Yeah, it took me a while. I had to go swimming first.
Well, Tracy, before we kind of get into the meat potatoes of everything, I definitely want to pay condolences to you on Gary Austin's passing. He was the founder of the Groundlings.
It wasn't really much of a shock, I guess, although I'm sure the people close to him, it was surprising because he had been fighting whichever disease it was. It was some kind of cancer. I don't know the technical name of it, but like a lymphoma thing or something like that. I don't think I ever was told, actually.
Okay.
But, it was kind of a shock to people who didn't know that he'd been battling that.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it's something that you really don't divulge, per se. I mean, Steve and I here, we had a very close friend of ours last year pass away due to lung cancer. So, yeah, sometimes it's just something unexpected. And the ones that are close know, but everybody else doesn't. So, understandable.
Right.
But on the other hand, we definitely want to congratulate you with your daughter, Charlotte. I understand she is pregnant for the first time. You're going to be a grandmother for the first time?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yes.
Boy, we already know it's a boy.
All right.
Oh. Yeah.
Very cool.
His name is Logan.
They've already Logan. Named it?
I know. It's so strange to be talking about a child that's not here yet.
You know, he's got a movie out, right? He's already got a movie out before he's born.
Movie already out.
And then also congratulations on the 20th anniversary of the puppy episode.
Yes, it is. It was a very big deal. I was on Ellen on Wednesday.
Yeah, how did that go? I saw a couple of the pictures on Facebook.
Well, you know, it was what it would be expected to be like. I mean, we were the writers, so we're not celebrities, so it's not like we were sitting on the panel with Oprah and her.
Uh-huh.
But we were, we did a filmed interview before the show, which was fun, just my partner and I. And then we did, we were in this green room with, the celebrities that were there. And then we sat in the audience, and she came out in the audience and hugged us. It was, I have to say, just the whole thing was a big thrill.
Uh-huh.
I was crying for about an hour.
Oh.
We were sobbing in the audience. The whole audience was
That's
sobbing.
That's awesome.
Well, I mean, that episode was just a huge, huge deal when it came out, And I remember watching the commercials for it and everything about her coming out of the closet. And one of the things I remember, too, is where she literally came out of a closet, and the line was something to the fact of, "That's not what I'm talking about."
Yeah, they started it out with Spence and Paige and Audrey and can't remember Joe, I guess, was the David Higgins character, yelling at her from the bookstore. When are you coming out? Come on out, we're waiting.
Wow.
So then, she makes an entrance into the store from the closet.
it was funny. It was really, really circle. Yeah, we're still here, Tracy. So let's get down to the meat and potatoes of everything. So, I mean, you and I are both musicians and everything. And, of course, you were a teenager when you started to play guitar as well, correct?
Yeah. Well, how old were you?
I was about 13, 14 years old. What about you?
Yeah, I was 14.
Okay. And now, what was kind of life growing up in your home life? I mean, was that something where music was always around and you decided to pick up the guitar?
The music that was in my household was Broadway shows mostly, and Judy Garland stuff. You know, I'm 100 years old, so, you know.
Oh, stop it. I love Judy Garland. So you're young.
I used to sit in a rocking chair next to my Victrola. Listen to Judy Garland over and over again and try to sing like her, which, you know, she was really belting a lot, and I was yelling, really.
Did you ever go through those beginning, like, belter exercises they teach you, like, hey, taxi, Ethel Merman, like?
I had no exercises. I was, like, 7 or 8, and my mother would be, you know, Tracy, close your door. My mother just, it drove my mother crazy. Even when I got the guitar and was practicing, I had to go out to the, I know, on my bio it says I practiced on the swimming pool, you know, the diving board of the swimming pool.
Right.
Because it was the farthest thing away from the house. We didn't always have a swimming pool, but one of the places we had a swimming pool, and I would practice as far away from the house as I could be. And wow. My mother did not support anything related to show business because she and my real father were in show business, and she got pregnant, and that kind of put the kibosh on a career. You know, they got pregnant with my brother and then me, and, you know, back then getting, you know, suddenly having kids, it wasn't always planned for. I guess it's still, I know it's still
still not planned for
people, but you know, back then it was just such a different time. I mean, you didn't think about getting an abortion for one thing,
right? True.
You know, it just drastically would change your life, especially if you were not in any way prepared for it, which my parents were not.
Gotcha. So
you know, she was not thrilled with the idea of her kids going into show business, which they already knew from experience was impossible.
And two of you ironically did, and I think that was kind of the
Well, I did, and Lorraine did, and my Lorraine has a twin brother. He's got a band called Dutch Newman and the Musical Melodians, which rather redundant title, but anyway, it's a great band, and they imitate kind of 20s music, and it's just amazing. And my older brother designed the lighting for Van Halen for his shows, and did
lighting design.
Yeah, at the Roxy and stuff like that. My older brother ended up in show business, so we all ended up in show business.
Despite what your parents thought of anyway.
Right. And of course, you know Lorraine. Lorraine went on to do Tracy. Saturday Night Live, so, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It was quite a shock to my mother.
This is Steve. How you doing? Tracy.
Who did you say?
I'm one of the co-hosts. I'm Steve.
Yeah, so Steve's going to ask you a question, Tracy.
I was listening to your music the other day, and I got to tell you, your voice is really cool. I like the kind of the attitude and the love that comes through when you sing. But in the song Lorraine, which you paid tribute to your sister, you described how you and your sister were very close. Like, you mentioned something about her being your best friend.
Yeah, she is my best friend.
When did that start? Did you guys hang out together when you were little?
She's 9 years younger than me. And the way that started, my mother divorced my father and then remarried 3 years later. And she married Arnold Newman. And, you know, my brother and I were legally, you know, took his name. My real name's Tracy Forrest, actually. And
Newman sounds better.
I don't know. But anyway, then Lorraine and Paul, who are twins, were born in 1952. And my mother was sick for about 6 months after the birth. That was a time when it was not uncommon to get hepatitis from, it was called yellow jaundice. In the hospital. And also, I don't know why, somehow it was related to the birth. But she was in bed for 6 months. So I was like a surrogate mother, and because I was, 9 years old, and I could take care of kids, so my closeness to Lorraine and Paul began really, really. Paul is Dutch's real name. He changed his name to Dutch because Paul Newman. It's hard to believe.
That figures. Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's really cool. I mean, did you lead them around and do crazy things with them in a way? Or
yes, I did.
She's the leader.
I told them to do things that made me laugh.
That's awesome.
They were both really funny children.
That's awesome. Ah. That's awesome. Now, going back with your music and everything, you, again, started playing music around the same age that, you know, the idea of about 13, 14 years old. What were your major influences?
Well, mine, again, I'm 100 years old. My major, you know, I mean, I really started learning to play the guitar at, before the beginning of the folk craze.
Okay.
Like the Kingston Trio were just starting out, and I was in L.A. and Bud and Travis. I don't know if you remember. You probably don't know who that is. But anyway, they were popular at the Troubadour, and I would go to the Troubadour, you know, as a teenager and see these folk acts. Uh-huh. And the New Christy Minstrels, groups like that, it just was stuff. Hey, look, if I could play it, if it had three chords, I could play it. If it had four chords, it was a challenge. So, okay. Like when the Beatles came along,
you were screwed.
It was quite a learning curve for me. All of a sudden, I had to add some minors to what I was playing, and I was. I became a way, way, way better guitar player once the Beatles.
Well, I mean, I've obviously had a chance to see you perform live, and I mean, you're a wonderful finger picker. You know, when you're playing.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, you know, when you've been playing that long. I mean, think about it. You're just, you know, I don't even think about it anymore. And if I improve something, if I learn something new at this age, it takes me a much longer time to practice it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I understand that you've got to get it down.
Yeah.
I mean, James Taylor is probably the best example of what happens if you perfect something, you know.
Right.
He's the easiest guy on stage in the world.
Now, Kingston Trio, my father loved that group also, and of course I have some of my father's albums, so I knew them very well. But what made you lean more towards, let's say, folk music versus, let's say, you know, more of a rock base, kind of like, let's say, the Beatles, because you obviously listen to them as well.
Well, I did lean toward, once the Beatles came into on the scene, I immediately went in that direction. But as far as, though, playing, it's easier for me to play folk songs.
Because of the three chords. Yeah.
Well, it isn't just the chords, it's the rhythms, too.
Oh, okay.
You know, the all rhythm, right. I mean, if you don't have a band, it's pretty hard to be a pop singer.
True.
You didn't have a band?
But you can be a singer songwriter in the more in the folk vein or, all, you know, kind of Americana vein without a band. And I did have a band for 10 years, but it wasn't that kind of band either. It ended up being kind of more folk, jazz, you know, that kind of feel as opposed to rock.
Gotcha.
How did you go from performing the folk music to being a founding member of the Groundlings?
God, that's an interesting way to put that question. I lived in New York for 2 years in 1965, and when I came back, I was so disenchanted with show business, you know, because I had gone to New York to become a star in my late teens and early 20s, and that didn't. I had a lot of great opportunities, but you know, when you're 20 years old and you get a great opportunity, you think they're a dime a dozen,
right?
And you don't understand that you should really, rather than turning up your nose at an opportunity because they say something like, you know, wear high heels, and you don't want to, you could say, no, I'm not going to do that. That's not me, you know. And so I had a lot of wonderful opportunities in New York, but I brushed them off. And when I came back to L.A. again to continue being a star, I don't know what I was doing. And I became a nursery school teacher.
Did you really?
And,
oh my God.
Yeah. And I quit. I actually quit show business.
Wow.
And I started writing songs realistically. I mean, I really started to write songs, and that was like 1969, 1970.
Uh-huh.
I started to really write. And, I don't know. I was dating, during that time I dated Ricky Jay, the magician, and I learned to do cards really well, and I was on the Tonight Show doing cards. I mean, I had a very kind of dilettante period where I started to do a couple of things really well, but I wasn't really like lifetime committed to them.
Right.
And then I started to date Stanley Myron Handelman. You probably never heard of him, but he was a really funny stand-up comic. And for some reason, that led me to looking for an improv class.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know why. And so I found this class and that Gary Austin was teaching at this place called the Cellar Theater in LA here.
Right. Yeah.
And that class, you can't even imagine. I mean, that class, that was Tim Matheson, Craig Nelson.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Let's see. Valerie Curtin, who you probably don't know who that is, but she was amazing. And
wow,
Archie
Valerie Curtin.
Well, Valerie Curtin ended up marrying Barry Levinson, and they wrote that great movie with Burt Reynolds and Goldie Hawn, I think called Best Friends.
Oh, yes, I remember that movie.
It still holds up. That movie is an amazing movie.
Yeah.
And anyway, but she was really funny improviser, and it just was this whole group of people who wanted to improvise. And then I brought my sister to the class, and then the class turned into a show because it was so funny. And that's how the Groundlings started to get together. And so I wouldn't say that my music led me there, but it was sort of as I took a
break.
Excuse me, I took a break from performing that I ended up getting involved in improv.
Now, how long were you a part of the Groundlings overall, Tracy?
Oh, I still really am, but I mean, I don't teach anymore or direct there. But I was there for 15 years, you know, every day. That was my job.
Okay. And you just mentioned that teach and direct. So how did that come about? I mean, was it after?
Well, you know, I wasn't, you know, I know that my friends would argue with this because they're kind, but I was never a great improviser. I'm a good performer. That's my opinion of myself. I think I'm a good performer, but I'm not a really good improviser. But I understand what it takes. So you didn't need any credentials to run a class back then. You know, you just needed to want to do it and to see the talent in other people. And I enjoyed creating a good atmosphere for improvisers. And, you know, I ended up working with, like everybody, Phil Hartman, John Lovitz, Kathy Griffin. They were all, Lisa Kudrow, they were all at various times probably students of mine. And also I was directing some of those shows. So, and also a lot of TV writers were workshopping there and learning their trade. So, I mean, there's as many TV writers coming out of the Groundlings as there are, and movie writers as there are performers.
Well, it's
like a farm company for SNL and for comedy in Hollywood, really.
It is.
It's funny you mentioned.
You know, Will Ferrell's from there, too. And Will Ferrell, you know, that Funny or Die thing is amazing. And, of course, you've seen what he's done with his career.
Right.
And Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, they're all from the Groundlings.
Wow. Well, you mentioned the writing part of that. It's only you and Jonathan have quite a track record. I'm wondering how was
We met there, but we met at the Groundlings, and you know we had worked together there, rewriting sketches and doing improv, and you know, just one thing led to another, and we started writing, and our first job turned out to be Cheers. But you know, we tried to get work for about a year before that.
Oh, I was wondering if it was hard to get into the television part of it.
Yeah, but knowing people the executive producers of Cheers at that time were ex-Groundlings. So, nepotism.
Kind of like being like a part of a fraternity then, basically.
Yeah, you have to know people, I believe, but you also have to have the goods at the right time.
True. That's very, very true.
You know,
true.
I mean, if we had approached them and we didn't know how to write, then we wouldn't have gotten a job.
Right. So, I mean, you and Jonathan obviously then wrote many, many shows, as we mentioned before, including Cheers. What goes into creating a TV show like According to Jim, where it evolves around a central character versus like an ensemble like Cheers?
Well, it's a good question. You know, if you think about it, starting with people like Seinfeld and Brett Butler and Ray Romano and Roseanne, there was a time when the shift became not so much what the writers' lives conjured up, but what the star's life conjured up. And it would be like you'd see a guy like Ray Romano and you'd listen to his act, like Phil Rosenthal created Everybody Loves Raymond, along with Ray Romano. And it's Ray Romano's story. And the, a lot of these comics come with their story. You know, it may, right. may not be exactly what their story is, but it's their approach to life. And when you have somebody who's lived a whole life like that and they have a solid approach and it's relatable, my God, it's just a really valuable thing. Now, in our case, we didn't create a show. We created a show with a star, but not his story.
Versus,
you know,
he wasn't a
stand-up comic.
Right,
I mean, Jim Belushi was a terrific actor and funny.
Right.
And that's what we needed. Uh-huh. But we tried to create, we had a development deal at ABC and Disney for a number of years. We wrote about 8 pilots that didn't get done. And, you know, it just was, the timing was right. I think ABC at that time needed another family show.
Right, right.
And Jim Belushi became available at the right time. You know, again, it's that thing of being in the right place at the right time and having the goods.
Yeah. Was it because you obviously have written for other shows around comedians. Was it easier to write for that type of a show, or was it a little bit more difficult knowing that you had to write around their story?
Well, we didn't create any shows, though, based on anybody's, you know, on a stand-up comics act. And Belushi, because he wasn't a stand-up comic, he only came to us with a lot of skills.
Gotcha. Okay.
My partner's life, on the other hand, he has 2 daughters, and we on the show, Jim has 2 daughters, and we kind of patterned it after my partner's.
Oh, okay.
Life. And, you know, it was a whirlwind time for me. I can really draw a blank on how that all came about. Everybody has such a different idea of like how Jim was attached suddenly to the thing and mm-hmm. how we sold it. It all happened so fast.
Wow.
We didn't have the name of the show.
It just all of a sudden, boom, it was there.
A real mess. But it just somehow came together. And also, I think the critics expected nothing from us. You know, they put, in fact, when we went to, do you know what the upfronts are?
I've heard of that, though, but I don't know exactly.
You know, I honestly don't know what it is either, other than that if you write, it's something that happens in New York where all the shows are presented to the sponsors. I think it's presented to the sponsors and to the news, you know, the news media. So we went and did the upfronts with our show, which at that time was called The Dad for some reason, because ABC didn't, we didn't have a name. So ABC just called it The Dad. I even have these banners that say The Dad.
Keep it simple.
And, right. And so at the same time, though, Jason Alexander was doing a show, and I can't remember the name of that.
Oh, but yeah. It was short-lived. I remember.
And so, oh, my God, they put Mr. Hooperman? No, it wasn't that. But anyway, he was doing, and he's so good.
Yes.
So they were putting all their eggs in that basket, and they, you know, all the critics were raving about the upfronts and Jason's presentation and how great he is, and nobody said anything about Jim. So we kind of had our first season, to develop that show.
Yeah.
But you know, if you look at the pilot of According to Jim, that pilot would, I think, would really hold up. That show started out being really it was really good, I thought.
Well, you guys ran for 8 seasons, though. I mean, which was great.
Ran for 8 seasons, you know, but it got kind of simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it turned into a lot of physical comedy between Jim Belushi and Larry Joe Campbell, which. Larry Joe Campbell's so funny.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Played the brother-in-law, and the two of them together, I loved it. And but I mean, I left the show after 3 seasons, and after we sold to syndication, after 100 episodes, I left.
Oh wow, okay.
And I quit television and went back into being a singer-songwriter.
What was it that made you decide to do that? Were you just tired of writing?
You know, a lot of things. I had been writing for television for almost 20 years. And I play, you know, I've been playing the guitar since I was 14, and I hadn't stopped playing and I hadn't stopped writing. And I thought, well, what am I going to do with all this? I may be too old to start some big music career, but I'm not really too old to go out and perform, sing in local clubs and, you know, make CDs. And then when I latched on to doing kids' CDs with my daughter, I mean, the idea that I get to work with my daughter, it suddenly that became more exciting than anything maybe that I'd ever done.
Right, yeah.
And
I was going to ask you, did you feel that being a songwriter helped you become a better writer for television, or did television help you become a better songwriter?
Vice versa.
Okay.
I felt I was a pretty good songwriter, I thought, anyway, before I wrote for television. But, you know, when you have to tell a whole story in 22 minutes, it's not a big leap to say, okay, now I'm going to tell a whole story in 4 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but you learn how to get all the, you know, to constantly add information when you have to make something short. It's much harder to do a shorter thing than a longer thing, I think. And so for a song, I mean, you want to answer all the questions so that the listener understands what's going on. And you have about 4 minutes to do it, 3 to 4 minutes to do it. And television writing sitcoms really helped me.
Very cool. Now, how do you write overall, Tracy? Because I know the way I do, I'll start with normally, you know, a working title and kind of, you know, go from there. What is your approach to songwriting? Is it music first or lyrics first, or just kind of sit down and work it out?
I think I do music and lyrics at the same time usually, but I have done it from a title and I have done it the other way. But I usually do, once I latch on to what it is I want to say, mm-hmm. both of them, I do both of them at the same time. And then I may change the melody entirely.
Oh, wow.
In other words, once I get the words right, I may say, you know, I can do a better melody.
Well, you mentioned working with your daughter, Charlotte, this latest album. Tell us about how that came about, how it is that you do that. I imagine you enjoy that.
Yeah, you know, it started out with the idea was when my daughter was little, she was one of those kids that was really hard to get her to go to sleep. So I would sing to her, and I would finally figured out after singing to her for about a year every night, I figured out that it's...
Wow.
That a certain group of songs in a certain order made her fall asleep.
Bored her to death then, right?
So that's what I did on my first kid's CD. I presented families with this tool to get their child to go to sleep. And that's what I Can Swing Forever starts out with, a lot of fun little songs, uh-huh. and it slowly drifts into this, you know,
to go to sleep.
And you cannot listen to this song, this whole album in the car. You'll fall asleep.
Yeah, that'll be a dangerous thing. Yeah, be a very dangerous thing to do.
But if you want your kid to fall asleep, take them, put them in the car and play this CD and they'll be asleep by the end of it.
Wow, that's not cool. Now, your daughter also does something else too, which I want you to bring up, because I didn't get a chance to see it last time, and I know you invited myself, Kat,
Charlotte Shorts.
Charlotte Shorts, yeah. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know what? I was talk about being surprised. I mean, I know my daughter's talented, but I had no idea that she could write comedy. None. I knew she was funny,
uh-huh.
but you know, she'd been keeping journals. And I didn't realize that her journal writing was kind of character observations and dialogues. And so when she had an art show, this was in Santa Monica. This was about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. She did an art show, and I said, instead of expecting people to come and just look at the artwork and then leave, because that's what happens.
Right.
Why don't you have some entertainment? I can get some of my friends to read some of your journals.
Oh, how fun.
You know, some of your journal entries. Get some of the groundlings to come and do that. So they did. They got about six groundlings to come and read some of her journal entries. And the art show was successful, but my God, the readings were like wildly successful.
That is awesome.
So then we thought, well, we should just put a show on because this is amazing. And it turned out to be really fun. And, you know, it's hard. She lives in Seattle. And she's married, and she and her husband are redoing their house by themselves. You know, they're actually doing the building.
Oh, I've gone through that.
And now she's pregnant, and she's also teaching children, and it's hard for her to keep doing, like doing a show where we can mount it at the Groundlings and use Groundlings and it's stuff that she's already written. That's not that difficult. But then to now, you know, make it into something bigger,
right?
Like a TV show or something like that. She has to live here. So in a year, they've decided in a year, they're actually moving here.
Oh, how wonderful.
Getting their house ready to rent it.
Wow.
Or sell it. I'm not sure how they're going to do that.
Yeah.
And then they're going to buy something here. And I think she will launch herself into comedy unless she's too busy as a mother and just decides she doesn't want to do it. You know, that
right.
that could happen too.
Yeah.
But she's a really, really good comedy writer. I mean, I think of, you know, my television career and I look at my daughter and if I had been, I was not that, I mean, I'm a good comedy writer, but not like my daughter.
It seems like the apple didn't fall, you know, far from the tree, as they say.
Yeah, well, and then her dad, by the way, is a really funny writer too.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say it's kind of like my son Tracy. You know, it's, you know, being a musician, you know, for, you know, 25 plus years, you know, and you know, I've got guitars all over the house and everything and so forth. And next thing I know, my son is now following my shoes and becoming a singer. You know, himself, and he's
probably
a better
way better than you.
He is. He's getting more YouTube hits than I do. You know, I'm just like, geez. Oh.
Well, it is a different market. Right. You've got like 12, 13 year olds looking at YouTube. They want to see, you know, your son.
Yeah.
They want to look at little.
And he's and he's a great performer. I mean, I'll have to shoot you over some links, Tracy, on Facebook. It's funny.
Oh, please do.
Because he does these all rock and roll poses, you know, and everything. The last thing he
did.
Oh,
I'd love to see that.
Oh my God, it's hysterical, and it astonishes me every single time because I don't. He rarely practices, goes out on stage and just kills it, Tracy. Just absolutely kills it, and I'm like shocked. And I don't look at him as my son anymore. I look at him as a peer.
Well, you know, it's,
and he's 12.
And you're a fan. You become a fan of your own kid. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, and I just kind of help guide him and everything, you know, just to, like, connect with the audience and so forth and things of that nature. But I let him be who he wants to be on stage. And, yeah, I'll have to send you some links, Tracy.
Send me the link. And, there's a YouTube thing. I don't know if you ever saw it. It's me and my daughter maybe 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
She wrote a song called On Facebook. When Facebook first started, you know, and then I put a tune to it and she made us record it on YouTube and it was like take 11, I think is what we ended up posting. And it's like really, we're in our pajamas and it's really late at night. So I'm completely wiped out, but she's young, you know, she's like full of energy and everything, having a ball. So that's something fun to look up. It's
Tracy
Newman and Charlotte Dean. I think that's all you have to type in.
Okay, we'll try.
The song is called On Facebook.
We'll have to post it on our website for the show, and so everybody can take a look at that too.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
So, Tracy, that brings us to where you are now. What's on the horizon for you? Are you going to maybe do a new album with Replacements? Replacements.
Wow.
The Reinforcements. That's
Reinforcements. Come on.
Yeah. How did they come about? I mean, what are you guys doing now?
I actually just disbanded my band about 6 months ago, and I had a bunch of gigs set up as a solo artist and did two or three of them and realized I wasn't really enjoying it.
It's tough.
Really?
So I just wasn't enjoying performing, and I used to love it so much. So I thought I just need to take a break or quit altogether. Mm-hmm. So I have made now, I've just finished recording my second kid CD, and I've just written all the songs for the third one.
Oh, wow.
So, and Charlotte's already done the artwork for the second one, and that one's actually ready to release. And I think what I'm going to do is start a business of children's, you know, CDs and coloring books, because I'll have a series after I do the third one.
Gotcha.
And spend a little more time figuring that market out, because I think that's a slightly easier market to crack than it definitely is than music in general. And I don't think I'm done, though, performing for adults and singing for adults and writing for adults. I just think I had to take a break because I'd been doing it over 10 years, and I was a little burned out.
So you said you take those breaks. It sounds like you've had a lot of times where you would get to a point, you would either like get tired of it, you'd have to go to a different avenue. I'm just kind of curious, in those moments, what were you thinking? What were you going through? What did you have to?
Well, the thing about leaving television or leaving the Groundlings, even because I eventually had left the Groundlings, you know, that was a huge move because I was so happy there. But I realized I needed to move on, you know,
just a different
especially
challenge.
From the Groundlings, because you can't hold on to your spot in the Groundlings forever. You know, there's only 25 people in the company and it's not fair. You know, people come up and they should have that spot.
Right, right.
You know, so but for television, leaving television when I had a successful show on the air, I realized, well, when am I going to leave? When I don't have a successful show?
Right.
You know what I mean? When I can't get a job?
And that's always, I think that's always a tough pull for people,
right,
I think,
so
in
I thought,
the industry.
Oh, I'm going to leave right now when my show is doing great.
Yeah.
And I can get a good deal, you know, so that I can, you know, stay on the show as a consultant maybe, but not go in.
Right.
Not go into work and drift away from television, you know, into songwriting. And I immediately started writing songs and recording. And I didn't, you know, but it was also, during that time also, I started to write a book, which I finished, but I never released. And I don't know if I ever will. It's a little, it's very personal and sort of a lot of sex in it. And I just don't know.
Oh, then it needs to be released, Tracy.
Yeah.
It's got to be released.
Wait till my daughter is older.
She's doing the children
well, right now. I don't know how old
well,
she has.
Well, Tracy, your daughter's having her own kid. I think she already knows about sex.
So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I'll do with that. I mean, I'll always have that book. If you know what I mean. I can always release the book.
Well, you can always put it in song, too, or make it a musical.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I can do that. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I don't know. And I also am looking for something that where the work is hard, but not that hard. I mean, working on television is really hard work.
Yeah. You know, you're looking for something more enjoyable with a little bit of a challenge, though.
Yeah. But I don't want to go to a job anymore.
I don't think any of us do.
I've never wanted
people
to do that.
People think that writing TV, you know, how glamorous and everything, but really it's a 9-to-5 job, only it's not 9-to-5.
Right.
It's like 9 to midnight.
Oh.
You know, and you're always thinking about it. You can't get out of it. And it's always on your mind.
Right.
I don't know how people, you know, there's some people that when you're younger, you can do it. You know, you go to work at 10 and you leave at 2 in the morning and then you're back at 10, you know, and you do that 7 days a week. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah.
And I did do it for a while, but I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. Well, you got to do something you enjoy now, which is good. And,
yeah.
And, you know, basically right now, don't stop writing, whether it even for music, because I've enjoyed your music since the first time I saw you and opened for you and everything. I mean, you're a wonderful songwriter. I mean, one of my favorite songs is I Just See You. And,
oh, thank you.
You know, and I've actually kind of somewhat learned it myself, so I can kind of play it out every now and then too.
Tracy, he won't stop. We get in here.
He gets
the guitar out.
I
want to
hear you do I Just See You.
Ah. I'll do a recording for you to kind of do my version.
We'll
I don't do
it
as well
YouTube.
As you though. I don't do it as well as you. I kind of strum it instead of finger pick it and everything, but I mean, it's such a beautiful song, you know, overall.
Thank you.
And I can really relate to it now because I don't have the six pack anymore.
He's got the whole keg.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of jokingly say, you know, that, yeah, I work out, but, you know, I've chosen to get in shape, but the shape I've chosen is to be a pear.
Okay,
so.
Well, you know, nobody really chooses to be a pear. Sorry, sorry. No, we all turn into pears, but nobody chooses.
You're right, true. Tracy, thank you so much for being on with us. This has been such a wonderful experience, my friend. I really appreciate this opportunity for you to be on our podcast.
Well, thank you for thinking of me, and I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll send you those links. And we're going
to... Yeah, I want to see your boy.
Oh,
so
yeah. It's you're going to crack up, too, especially when he does the Journey song. But we're going to get up both your albums up on our website and have links because like myself, you and I both have another thing in common is we sell our stuff on CD Baby. So I'll make sure that they go to those links directly for you and help you out as well, my friend.
Fantastic.
So, yeah. So thank you again. And hopefully we can get you into our studio next time. I know it's a little bit of a drive for you. But maybe next time we will we'll catch up, get you in here, or we'll come out and see you perform.
Well, you know, you can always send a limo.
Oh, you know what? I know somebody. I know somebody.
Well, there we go.
Uber,
so,
yeah. I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely do that.
All right.
Okay. Tracy, thank you so much. You have a wonderful day today.
Thank you. You guys have a great time, too.
All right. Take care, Tracy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Tracy.
Bye.
We'll see you guys next week.
Goodbye, world. Love you.
Just a toothpick of a girl.